Welcome to The Culture's Money. The Culture's Money is a podcast created to discuss how we multiply the $1.2 trillion in spending power possessed by the American Black community through the vehicles of investing, personal finance, ownership, networking, and most importantly, collaboration. We are the culture, baby, and we are the financing that we've been seeking. Now, let's get into this money talk. And here's your host, Jamal Vitos.
All right, welcome back, culture members. This is episode 6 of The Culture is Money, your newest serial financial literacy podcast. I am your host, Jamal Vitos. Some of you may know me on other social media platforms as Leo Grand Prince. However you know me, I hope you know me as an advocate for financial literacy, financial growth, and financial wealth. I'm excited for this episode because we have another dynamic guest, another woman. The fellas ain't come on yet, but the women are definitely on a good direction. I'm especially excited for this episode because this guest has been a friend of mine for a long time. And I'm excited about the things that she's doing. I've seen her growth and her entrepreneurial spirit. So I would like to introduce y'all to Jasmine Bay.
Hey, say guys. Hi, Jess. Hey, guys.
Tell them a little bit about yourself.
Okay, I'm Jasmine Bay. 21 years old. I've been a salon owner since I was 21. My first salon was the J Spot Hair Salon. I had that for 8 years, and then I rebranded and launched Salon Slay. I sell extensions backed by Jasmine Bed, and I just recently became an author. I wrote my first book, and it's called 30 Years of Love in 30 Days, and it's based off a relationship that I was in. And that I'm just an all-around entrepreneur, so I just follow my purpose. Anything that I'm very passionate about, I go after.
Okay. So let's start with the entrepreneurial stuff. So owning a hair salon at 21 is a big step. Is entrepreneurship always something you wanted to do, or is it something you didn't know what it was until you got into it?
I actually didn't know what it was until I got into it. Originally, I wanted to be a fashion designer. That was my original dream. I was going to go to college for fashion. My mom wouldn't let me go out of state, and I didn't want to stay. So I was like, "Yeah, I don't want to go to college in state."
Any particular reason why not in college in state?
Because I felt like the best schools for fashion design were not in Maryland. We're not really known for that. So, and she was just so sick of me to go out of state because I'm her only child. So I was like, well, that was the only option for college. Like, I'm not staying. I didn't want to stay here and do that. So I decided to go to hair school. And hair was actually a second passion of mine, but I didn't. I was until I really started doing it. I knew I had a natural talent for it, but I didn't know how passionate I was about it until I really started, like, doing my friend's hair and then going to hair school, and then I realized how much I really actually like doing it.
Is there some correlation between fashion design and being a hairstylist? Because it is both creative methods, right?
Yeah, I think it's just about creativity when it comes to fashion and hair. Because I know, and it's weird because I love dressing up more than I actually care about my hair. Because you know me, I wear the same hairstyle over and over and over. But it's something about fashion. It's like a statement. It's just you expressing who you are.
Okay. How was that first experience? Like, take us through the process of opening the first J Spot. Like, did you have to get a loan? Did you bootstrap it, you know, saving your own money? How did that work?
Okay, when I first opened the J Spot, I lived for $1,000. I do not recommend, now that I'm older, now that, you know, I have a better understanding of business. If I'm opening another business, it's not going to be with my own money. It will be with a business loan.
Okay. Expand on that.
Okay, your money. So the J Spot, I had $1,000 when I opened up. It's a long slate. I opened up with $10,000. But here's the thing. I used that whole $10,000. I used that whole $1,000. So after that, it was just like, oh my God, I got to make more money. If I had a business loan, I would still have my money. After I spent the business loan, I would still have money to use. You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I say it's better to get a business loan.
so you don't have your whole personal financial assets tied up in whatever venture you're going through.
No.
Exactly. So it wasn't
now. No. Yeah. But when I first started out, yes.
So do you think the fact that at the first salon you had your own money tied into it and you needed to make more money to be cash flow positive, do you think that kind of lit a fire under you?
Definitely. But even with the second one, again, I use my own money for that. But my other business ventures that I'm into now, I'm not using my own money. You get what I'm saying? So,
right. I
feel like it was all a learning experience for me.
Uh-huh.
Because, again, I only was doing what I knew.
So, were you the first in your family to ever take the entrepreneurial path? Like, is that where the learning experience and the trial by error came from?
Yes. My mom started her entrepreneurial journey as an adult, like an older adult.
Okay.
So, she started hers maybe a couple years before I started mine. So, it was fairly new in my family. Everybody else in my family, they pretty much play it safe. Like, they get good jobs and, you know, they just play it safe. They entrepreneurial journeys wasn't a thing.
All right, you got to get it. Let me guess, it's that whole get a federal or state job mantra.
Uh-huh. Because my great aunt, my aunt Bernice, she worked for Social Security for years. She retired from there. And my mom, she worked and then she took an early out to follow her entrepreneurial journey. But again, that was all my family really knew. So that's why my mother took the same lead as my aunt.
Okay.
But where with me, she was just like, you know, what do you want to do? And whatever I decided I wanted to do, she would roll with it. She's like, I'm not going to, you know, make you get a job if that's not where you see yourself at.
Now, that's an interesting concept. She didn't want you to leave the state because you were only a child and go to fashion school, but she was willing to encourage your entrepreneurial, like, ambitions. Was that a good, you know, a good support system? You know, your mom willing to, like, follow whatever career path that you wanted to take?
Yeah. When I was 21, she said she just felt like I wasn't ready to live out of state by myself.
Uh-huh.
That was her whole thing. She was more so worried about me not being mature enough. And also, now that I look back, I don't think I was that mature. Like, now that I'm talking about, you know, moving out of state, my mother's like, okay, we're going to help you. So now I know she sees the difference in me. So she's more comfortable with me living out of state now versus when I was 21.
Do you think, for sure, I'm sure the experiences running businesses, that probably definitely matured you.
Definitely and quickly.
Talk about that.
Okay. So, I mean, I'm 21 and all my friends are basically getting drunk, having the time of their life. They're at every party and I had to focus on running a business, making sure the bills in the business get paid because me and my mom had an agreement that I paid all the, because our businesses were in one building. So I paid all the buildings business and she paid the home bills. I mean, all the business bills and she paid the home bills. So I had to grow up quick to go from really not paying bills to learning how to pay bills. And I learned how to pay bills without having a staff. Mm-hmm. So that even when they left, I would still always be good. So it was pretty much, I would say it was kind of tough, but it taught me discipline. But it was tough because I feel like I missed out on a lot of things in my early ages of just like running wild. But maybe it kind of saved me because I did do some things a little younger. But
yeah. Now, is it, I always hear that sometimes. So is it that you missed out or was the experiences just delayed? And because you focused on putting yourself in a better position, you were able to experience those experiences at a higher level than you would have otherwise?
Yeah, then again, I wouldn't say that I necessarily missed out because I can say those years of business were really important.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think if I'd experienced them later, I don't think I would be where I was right now. Like, I honestly don't think I would be.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like I said, I definitely feel like it taught me how to be disciplined and how to pay bills and how to sacrifice. Because it's a lot of sacrifices when you're running a business. You have to sacrifice a lot. It was some, you know, I lost friends behind at the beginning because they... you think you're better than us, or like, you can't do this, you can't do that. And I would just had to explain to them, like, yo, I have a brand I represent. I can't be just like y'all drunk, falling all out in the middle of the street, being crazy. I can't do none of that stuff.
Talk about that. That's the point I think some people miss sometimes. Like, the entrepreneurship, it often sheds some of your relationships, right? Like, the more you grow, the more you shed old habits as well as old entanglements, right?
Definitely. You get to see who's with you because you're beneficial, or who's really with you because they genuinely love you and they genuinely care about you.
Now, from what I know, the beauty business, especially barbershops and hairstyles, they are high cash flow business. Having that type of money coming in cash daily, did that also teach you financial literacy and financial discipline as well as business discipline?
No, I'm going to tell you what taught me financial responsibility and discipline. Because, no, I was young. I was 21. I was making a lot of money. Mm-hmm. I wasn't thinking about an accountant. I wasn't thinking about none of that, okay? I was thinking about, oh, I love designer bags. I love clothes. I'm just spending my money. I'm going to make it back. I'm going to make it back. That was my way of thinking. And one day the hot water tank went up in the salon, and I had to pay for that to be replaced. Wait a minute, I don't have no money to replace this, and I should have some money to replace this. So that was the day that it dawned on me, you need to start saving money. You can't go with the "you gonna make it right back." Granted, you will make it back, but you can't. I couldn't live like that. That was the one experience that taught me, like, I had to start saving, and that's how I started saving.
And what's that thought press like? Like, when you know the money's coming in fast and everything, you're living high and you're living stylish, and then a business expense happens that you weren't expecting. Like, what's your thought process when that happens?
When I was distraught, okay? Like, because, like, real life showed up. Like, it was like, oh, business is not always, oh, a good day, a happy day. No, life shows up, things happen, things break that needs to be fixed. And you need to have an emergency fund to take care of this stuff. So I always felt like my mindset was, well, not to offend anybody, but like a drug dealer. That's how a lot of them live their lives. They just live for the moment. And that's what I was doing. I was living for the moment. I wasn't living for the future.
Now, that's actually a good analogy. I'm glad you said it, because this is a show about the culture and about, you know, our mindsets and how we live. And a lot of us who start off in business or in hustle or in whatever entrepreneurial ventures we are, we do have that mentality, because at least one of us have had, one person in our family has dabbled in those, I'll call them, nefarious activities. And we've seen fast money come and go. And we take that into our businesses. And that can be a good thing, but that can also be a bad thing, because we live the day-to-day as opposed to the long-term thing. So after the water tank went up, did your mentality start to transition from day-to-day to long-term planning?
Yes, it definitely turned into long-term planning. I started figuring out ways to save my money. And it started simple. It started with simply saving my ones, my fives, and my tens. It started simple with that.
And then
grew more and more, I started, okay, all right, let's add more. Let's do $20 a day, $20 a work day. And then after that, before I even got into opening Salon Slate, it was like a plan prior 2 years to that. And I was like, what can I do to save up $10,000 quick? So I had created a bundle and weave package, 3 bundles, any length, and a weave. For what I get my hair for, I can afford to do it. So with that, every one of those that I would do, because they would start out, at $400. I would save $100 off of that. So I figured out a system that worked for me when it came to saving.
One thing I wanted to talk about specifically is, in your industry, customer service is essential. So did you basically learn customer service through trial and error, or was it just something you always had? It's like a sociable personality that kind of just rolled over to your business.
I would say when it came to customer service, I've always been a nice person. Like, you know me personally, Jamal. I'm not mean unless somebody make me be mean to them. Like, I'm just not a snappy person. Mm-hmm. I don't take my frustrations out on people. So I've always been a person that was nice to people. I've always been kind. I'm not. So I think it was easy for me to do customer service, you know, that part of my business, because that's just how my heart set up. So I don't think it was, you know, hard for me. And I didn't get to a point where I felt like I was, oh, I'm better than these people. And you know how some people get. Yeah, mm-hmm. I didn't get to that point.
One thing I think gets left in, because, you know, I'm big on customer service and small Black-owned businesses, not skipping that part because it's essential. But the one thing I think gets missed sometimes is that even people with the best customer service, the best products, you're not always going to please all your customers. It's no way to avoid a bad review or someone being unsatisfied for whatever reason. So how do you handle when a customer is unsatisfied and you've done your best to try to, you know, appease them whatever, and they're still not satisfied? Like, do you just chalk it up and say, you know, you can't please them all?
Yeah, in that case, sometimes when it comes to that, you have to agree to disagree. Like, mm-hmm. if I've done all I can, and I'll go to that, like, I'll do all I can, but there are people who get your business just to come in, just to see how you're going to react to them, just to see what your response is going to be, just to cause some type of chaos in your business. So it's, mm-hmm. you're always going to meet those kind of people. And for me, I just call it fade a spade. I don't sweep anything under a rug. I'm very direct with people. So if I feel like you're doing that, I'm going to say it to you. And it never comes off mean, but I'm going to say, hey, look, you know, since you came in here, you've had an attitude, you know, I haven't done anything to you, you know, what's going on? I've been nothing but respectful to you. You should be respectful to me. You know, I'm going to be direct with you. And most people, they don't even like, they're not used to somebody being direct with them. So that shuts them down the top. So that's how I handle people who are just those one that, like, they're never satisfied.
Yeah. And I think we've talked about this before, like, you've actually fired clients. Oh, which I think sometimes
one thing about me, firing clients.
And I always think that, and I always live by this mantra, like, consulting with people, I always tell people, all money and good money. Like, you have a right as a business owner to file your clients or refuse service.
Definitely. I will fire a client quickly. I will block you from the scheduling system. An appointment, it gives them the reason why they are not allowed to make an appointment with me. I do not try respect in any way, shape, or form to my business, to myself, to my staff. No, you will not disrespect me for a dollar. I'm not a slave to a dollar. I don't play disrespect whatsoever. I don't play people feeling like Grant, I do have to serve it for you, but I'm not a slave to you. So you will not wave your money over my head as if, you know, I have to really do something and you have such a negative attitude towards me while I'm trying to do what I do. So yeah, I fire clients. I don't have a problem with that at all. You know, I don't, because when you fire one client, you're going to get five more. I don't have a problem turning down money.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll say about that, and like in working in operations, you've been in business 10 plus years now. Do you find that our people hold our businesses to such a high esteem? And by that, I don't mean that they shouldn't get customer service or everything like that. I'm saying that when a mistake is made or one bad experience is had, they blackball the business in their mind and always swear to never picture it again. But if they have a bad experience at a Walmart or their corner Chinese joint, you'll always see them back in there. So do you think they give us unrealistic expectations?
Definitely. I do feel like they do give us unrealistic expectations sometimes. But then there are businesses. But also, I want people to understand, if it's a new business, if it's a very new business, well, I mean, like, they're in their first year of business, give them some grace. 90% of people that open up have no idea what they're doing. They just know they have a talent. And people don't realize everybody that has talent does that. That doesn't come with the talent. That's something you learn. And that's something you have to be willing to learn. It doesn't just fall in your lap. So some people in their first year of business do unprofessional things, and they don't even know that they're being unprofessional.
That's the key. I think you said that. I think you said something very profound there, because people don't all people don't know business operations.
Right. And if they don't have friends like you or in the finances, like, you know, if they don't have friends like that, they really don't know. They're just
right.
solely working their business off their talent and not with a business mindset. Mm-hmm. So they don't know.
Okay. All right. So I want to get into this new venture that you're going to. You said in the intro that you become a self-published author, which I think is very dope, because it's not a lot of us publishing our stories or telling our culture from our point of view. But how does that transition? That's quite a leap. You know, that's what I consider industry change. You going from, you know, a talent of styling where you know, where it's like now you're an author, first time author, and you're doing it from the ground up. How does that go into your frame of mind and your transition?
I still can't believe I'm an author. Let's start there. It didn't really, like, it still kind of didn't hit me all the way. But once the books came, what was that, Thursday, and I opened the box and really seen a book, I was like, I really wrote a book. Like, I know I wrote a book, but now it's here in the physical.
Right. And not just a book. It has your name on it. Like, your name on the box.
It's my story. Like, it's not a made-up story. It's not a, you know, a fiction novel. This is... First of all, I just told my business. I'm a very private girl. We get transparent about business, but we just got transparent about our personal, yeah. the moment in our personal life. And, you know, that's always one thing I haven't done on social media. I'm very transparent with my business journey. But when it comes to my personal life, love, and things like that, I am not going to give you fuel to a fire. You know, I was like, But for me to even share this, it means a lot to me. And I think it meant a lot for me to do it out of myself for taking this step.
Now,
I really thought my first book was going to, if I ever wrote a book, I thought my first book was going to be about a journey. I didn't think my first book was going to be about a religion. I didn't think that.
Did you find the process therapeutic? I mean, was it hard? Did, you know, the words just kind of flow out? Like, take us through that.
I would say the hardest part of me writing this book is that I relive everything from the day I met him to the day he died. So I literally sat at my dining table for 2 weeks. We're in quarantine. I have nothing else to do, y'all. I'm not doing hair. So I sat there, and it took me back to 2015. It really took me back to the day we met, to first dates and everything. And, you know, after he died, you know how chaotic it got. And people were trying to tell me that, basically, I didn't mess with this man. They were trying to tell me, like, because I guess I was treated way different than other girls he may have dated or was dating. And I just always to myself, because I didn't feel a need to prove anything. I didn't feel like I had to post everything. We had about 100 pictures, and I didn't feel the need to post all up. I didn't feel a need to do anything at that time. And I just sucked it up because there was so much going on. And I felt like people never knew a way to attack me until they seen what actually hurt me. So when they seen that I was actually hurt about something, they used that to attack me. So what I did was I put on a mask and I act like nothing but, because that was my way. But I mean, you knew Jamal, because I would talk to you every day about what I really was feeling. But you know, on the outside, I had to put that poker face on and I had to keep it moving. But now that it's quiet, and this year, his mother told me herself, like, you need to go ahead and grieve him, because you never had the chance. I mean, she said, God is not going to send me my husband until I let him rest. So
in a way, like, is the book like a final eulogy? It's like a final, you know, closing of that specific chapter?
The book, I would say, I don't know, maybe because... I don't know what the first day that I don't know, every April I can tell whether I know the date or not. I can tell when I first met him. I can just feel it. And I woke up, and it's crazy because the dates in 2015 are the exact dates as this year. So the days and the dates are exactly the same. So we were on.
You mean they fall on the same day?
As they did in 2015. So I woke up on a Saturday morning and I was like, I think this is the day we went on our first date. And when I looked at my phone, I looked at the picture and I was like, oh my gosh, this is really the day that we went on our first date. So me and his mother talks all the time. So I had called. I was like, you know, she had me write a letter to him because she has a community called The Daily Dump. And it's a place for people grieving, no matter if you're grieving a lost child, a lost loved one of any sort, you can come there and you can, you know, you can talk to her about, you know, things you feel like you can't talk to everybody about because everybody don't accept such a feeling. And she's open to talking to you. Mm-hmm. You can write them letters that'll be posted, pictures of them posted if you want, pictures of them posted on her Instagram page. But I had wrote him a letter and I asked, I said, can I post the letter? Because I always respected her privacy too when it came to her son. So I always ask you for certain things before I do it. And I was like, can I post a letter? And she was like, yeah. And she said, matter of fact, post whatever you want. And I was like, you know, I'm going to save my letter. And I was like, that's a good page. And I was just like, I'm going to post our first date. And I'm going to just talk about it. Because what I have learned from her is when you're grieving, it's better to talk about it. Like, especially, like, all the good memories. Even down to the bed, it's just better to talk about it. So I realized, like, once I posted the first day, I was just letting myself breathe. Like, letting myself openly say these things and talk about our first dates and, you know, things like that. So mm-hmm. I didn't even expect people to be into it. I was just releasing. And I just would go day by day. And the more I started posting, you know, people were like, oh my God, this is awesome. Like, you should write a book. You should be an author. So I'm like, God, I'm supposed to write a book. Like, you know what I mean? Like, am I supposed to write a book? Like, you know, send me confirmation. Then I woke the next morning and another girl had said, your words are very captivating. You should be an author. And I was like, you know what? Okay, there you go. And I just started writing. I didn't even know. Let's start there. But I think that's the entrepreneur in me. I don't really know how to jump out there. I knew starting with a book, you gotta write. So I just started writing. Then I.
But that's telling though that you didn't know exactly how the process went, but you just started anyway and figured it out.
Yep, I just started. And one thing I've realized that is very big in business and just in any entrepreneur is networking. You need to know people, even if they're not in your industry. So my mom has a friend that's an author, and she's been an author for years. And she my mom was like, she says you need your book edited. You needed an editor. So I hired her as my editor to edit my book once I was done. So it was just good.
And that was a key that came through networking.
And before I had said anything to my mother about her, I was Googling the process of self-publishing, and it never says anything about an editor, which I realized it never said that when it came to self-publishing. Uh-huh. So I was like, God, I'm reading this stuff on Google, but I need a person. Like, you need to send me a person. And I was doing Insta story promos, and a girl I went to school with had hit me up like, hey, I wanted to pay for a promo. And I'm like, okay, well, send me your business stuff. And she sends a book. So I was like, wait a minute. I said, you self-published? And she was like, yeah. So I was like, if you self-publish your book, I said, could you do me this? Can we exchange stuff? I said, I'll help you with marketing if you help me with the process of self-publishing. Like, tell me what I need to do. And her response was, hell yeah. And that's what we did. Like, she told me, like, this is how we need to take to do it. And I helped her. I helped her with writing her book.
You know, the best part about what you just said is by chance, she needed something for you and she reached out, and what she sent to you happened to be confirmation what you were already doing. You, instead of taking the fee you would normally take for the promo, you bartered with her. It was like, I'll do this and you teach me the skill, which is so key. And I think people miss in business sometimes. Sometimes you need to get what's more valuable than the money.
I helped her, like, not just with the Insta story promo. I literally helped her how to brand and market her book outside of my Insta story promo, like how to actually market it, like how I think, what I think she should do in everything to, like, really, really get her book to sell. And I don't think people understand it. It's not always about money. It's about networking. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's okay to do things for free. And it's definitely okay to do it with your experience.
Oh, it's say okay. That again, man. Tell okay them it's okay to do
things for free, especially when you're doing it for the right people. Like, because let me tell you something right about the right people that's going to come to you that need your help. They're going to have something to offer you. It's not going to be just you just pouring into their cup. They're going to pour something back into your cup. And people don't realize it's not always about networking up. You need to market up, across, down. Market with new business, businesses that have been around for a couple years, businesses that have been around for years, or entrepreneurs that have been around for years. That's what, it's not just about trying to get up to a higher level. You're going to get to the higher level no matter which way you network. And some people are so caught up in getting, oh, I need to be with the known people. You need to network with whoever works for you. Because sometimes when you think higher up,
that's
you
work okay
higher up, you're doing better than them.
Talk about it. That everything that shine on social media ain't really shine.
Yeah, everything
is gold plated.
Everything that glitters ain't gold.
Nah, I'm telling you.
So yeah, so that's how that happened. And she pretty much gave me the way to self-publish. But she would say she gave me, after she showed me the way she did it, she said she had went through Amazon. She said, but there's other ways to, print your book and publish it. But you don't have to go through that. She said, but I went through that way. And when I went on Amazon, I kind of looked at it and I was like, it didn't kind of work for me. Because I'm scared of anything that's free.
Right.
Anybody trying to do something for me free or anything like that, it's kind of scary. Now when it's just exchange of service, I'm like, if Amazon is trying to publish my book for free, what do I owe them? Right. So
what are they getting out of it?
Feel like, what do I owe you? So if you publish my book,
and it's
I gotta owe you not only the money, but this book gotta belong to you. It can't possibly belong to me.
Yeah. And it's so funny you say that, because I actually read something, an article the other day that says when you publish through Amazon, get your own IBN number. Don't let Amazon get it for you, because bookstores will only order books that have IBN numbers. And Amazon, when they display whatever book they're selling for people, they don't do that. They don't display it. They just sell self-published, and bookstores are less willing
right
to order
those books.
They
don't give
books
you the ISBN number. They give you an Amazon something number. But they tell people it's an ISBN number, which I feel like is horrible. Why are you lying to people? Because your ISBN number is basically a social security number for your book. That's how your book is identified.
Right.
And if they own, you get your ISBN number from them, they basically own your book. And it can really, like you said, it can only be sold on Amazon. It can't be sold on other platforms. So I didn't take the free route. I actually paid for all the books out of my, out of my pocket. I didn't even go that route. I was like, because free is not free. And I know that my book is going to be a bestseller. I manifest this all the time. And I was like, the last thing I want is my book to get so hot and Amazon wants to, take control of it. Some shape or form. And they said Amazon can change the price on your book when you publish through them without telling you.
You telling things that so many people wouldn't know. They would just think that, hey, Amazon's a big, retailer, online e-commerce business. Let me just use this platform.
I feel like self-publish your books elsewhere, like print your book elsewhere. Like, they don't own anything of my book. And even that I liked about them is, even if you want to put your book on their site, you have to come with your copyright already, your ISBN number, all that. So they still don't own your book. They just take a percentage off of your book, which means you can take it on and off as you please. Not saying don't sell your book on Amazon, but don't publish them. Like, it's better to go ahead and put the money up front first, that way, than instead of trying to do it the free way.
Okay. We're almost at time. I want you to give them one bit of advice. You've been an entrepreneur for so long, now being an author. We're going to give you the last soundbite of the episode. Also, give them your social media handle where they can purchase your products, and especially where they can buy your new book.
Okay, the last thing I want to tell people, because I feel like this is something big, and everybody who feels like they have the entrepreneurial spirit, I want you to follow your passion. Follow what it is that you're passionate about, not what you see what is working for other people, because that is not always what's working for other people, and people people see people making a lot of money off something and don't realize that person is very passionate about that. You have to always follow what you're passionate about and not just do it for the money. Success is not just money. Success is, you gotta, people have to figure out what that means to them. But success is really a feeling. And how are you bettering other people in some way, shape, or form? My book, people are going to learn so many lessons from it, men and women. The purpose of my book. But you can find my book, 30 Years of Love in 30 Days, at my website, www.jasminbadd.com. That's J-A-S-M-I-N-B-A-D-D. No E on Jasmine. And my Instagram is also jasminbadd, J-A-S-M-I-N-B-A-D-D.
Okay. We definitely appreciate Jasmine coming on to tell us her story, tell us the tidbits about self-publishing, about running a business, about discipline, all the lessons that she gave us. This being the second guest that we have, I definitely like to thank her for, you know, giving us her time, because we all know time is precious. And, we, you know, when someone thinks it's not robbery to give up an hour of their time, we definitely appreciate it. As usual, I appreciate you guys for listening, and go out and buy all of Jasmine's products. Fellas, even if you don't need no hair extensions, get them just
or
in
buy
case.
My book.
Buy them
you,
too.
If you
buy
having trouble
book.
Dating, listen. Vegan will teach you how to date a woman. So get the book.
Get the book, definitely. And we'll definitely have Jasmine on again later on when she has other things she wants to share. As usual, I hope you guys are out here improving your financial health, your financial freedom, and your generational wealth. I am your host, Jamal Vitos, and I'll talk to you soon.
That's right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Culture's Money. You can follow Jamal on Instagram and Twitter at Leo Grand Prince. That's Leo Grand Prince. You can also get in contact with Jamal via Facebook and LinkedIn. Just type in his name. That's Jamal, J-A-M-A-A-L, Vitos, V-E-T-O-S-E. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time right here on The Culture's Money, baby.